welcome back to New World Next Week. I'm James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And I'm James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com, turning seawater into drinking water. We've got that story plus the rise of the fake news foundations. But first, the Doomsday Data Vault opens in Norway. We grab this via Paul Blake and ABC News inside a former coal mine. On a frozen island a few hundred miles from the North Pole, an effort is underway to preserve humanity's most valuable data. A data preservation firm with the funny name of Pickle, P-I-Q-L, has opened what it's billing as the safest place on the planet for digital embassy, for a digital embassy, to hold critical information for humanity in case of a global disaster. Located in a disaster-proof vault, the information is kept in permafrost conditions far away from political and physical instabilities in the rest of the world, the company wrote in a brochure detailing its new facility. The Arctic World Archive is for any country, authority, organization, company, or individual in need of ultra-secure storage of their valuable information with guaranteed access in the future. The Apocalypse Time Capsule, known officially, as we said, the Arctic World Archive, is housed in a mine on the island of Svalbard. Pickle says data is stored on a proprietary film it developed, making it impervious to attack or alteration. Svalbard, as you probably know, is also home to the Global Seed Vault, a similar effort aimed at preserving the world's crop diversity by storing seeds in the event of a planet-wide catastrophe. Now, we can include the download for that Arctic World Archive brochure, Can You Imagine a Safer Place?, which grammatically doesn't include a question mark. We'll also include, James, we talked about the Norway seed vault in relation to Bill Gates, the Rockefellers, and the GMO giants way back in September of 2010. We were barely 1 year old back on New World Next Week. So, James, here's another Doomsday Vault. Do we feel secure?
Well, that's a good question. Actually, it is the Can You Imagine a Safer Place? ... Flip the page to safeguard your valuable data? ... So they do finish the question, but and it is a good question. Can you imagine a safer place to safeguard your valuable data? Well, I would file this under the type of story that's a particular type of not unmitigated good news, in that this is a good idea. And I'm glad that there is something like this. But the real question, as always, when it comes to these types of things is, who controls this vault? And what happens in the event of the planetary worldwide cataclysm that this vault seems to be predicated on? Something that's going to wipe out human knowledge and history. What it potentially portends as what the so-called would-be elite are seeing in the cards is not a good one for any of us. And I don't know, maybe it's just me, but when I think of stories like this one and the Seed Vault, of course, which will also be in that same mountain in Svalbard, I think, you know, 10,000 years from now, after whatever complete catastrophe has taken place and wiped out most of the human species, and there's a few, you know, caveman-type people left scrounging around, and they form a new human civilization. Why do I imagine that that human civilization will eventually have its own parasitic, psychopathic elite at the top, who will then find this repository of human knowledge, take all the information, and then, you know, make it into some sort of area where you can't go, you can't dig under there, you can't dig under the left paw of the Sphinx kind of thing. I mean, it's, I don't know. I just wonder if this will be just another, you know, thing for priest classes of a future civilization to use as a weapon, essentially, against the people who don't know. But anyway, having said all of that, it's a good idea, I think. It's, again, just a question of who ultimately controls this. And when you look into the Seed Vault project, I haven't looked into this project and who is funding it and who owns it, but when you look into the Seed Vault project, and I've done that on multiple occasions, I'll throw in a link to a previous report that I wrote about this, you find all the same people that you usually find. It's Bill Gates, it's various Rockefeller-funded institutions and foundations, it's all sorts of people like that that are tied into the elite. So who controls the vault is more important than the vault itself, I think.
The article, which again, everything we say and mention on these shows will always be included in the show notes. That was, of course, a very truncated version of the article, which goes on to talk about some of the countries that have already given some of their things. It mentions Mexico's put their Declaration of Independence and sort of, you know, documents that countries and nations would find important to themselves. James, how long do you think we can go on this episode before we mention the Rockefellers again? Don't take that bet. As we move to our second story this week, eBay Omidyar commits $100 million to fight fake news and hate speech And we grab this article from The Telegraph that notes that the billionaire founder of eBay is to donate $100 million to fund investigative journalism and to combat the spread of misinformation online. Pierre Omidyar, one of the world's richest men, aims to tackle the global trust deficit by giving money to projects around the world. The funds will be dispersed over the next 3 years through the Omidyar Network, the philanthropic investment firm which he and his wife founded back in 2004, which has committed more than $1 billion to good causes. Those are my own air quotes there, because The Telegraph doesn't have time to get into what all those good causes are, but they have a few of them. First recipients include the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists, the group behind last year's release of the Panama Papers, which is getting $4.5 million. The Anti-Defamation League, the ADL, will also receive a grant towards the building of a new center in Silicon Valley to fight the growing threat posed by online trolls. What we've seen over the last 12 months particularly has been an increase in distrust. Distrust in government institutions, in the media, and in social media, said Stephen King, partner at Omidyar Network. I thought, man, Stephen King has really gone full-on social justice warrior. But no, it is not acclaimed horror author Stephen King. It's shady BBC Media Foundation guy, Stephen King, Omidyar Network partner. So, James, that's part one of this fake news story. Shall I pitch up part two?
Please do.
We'll grab it from TechEye. U.S. to train kids to handle fake news. A pilot education program in the U.S. is training kids to spot the difference between fake and real news. The problem is that anyone can publish anything on the web, and drilling the kids with a list of questions about a story could be the key. One course created by the nonprofit The News Literacy Project that teachers from California to Virginia are adding to their classrooms includes a 10-question checklist for identifying fake news that has questions such as, who made this? Who's making money off of this? Who might help or be harmed by this message? What is left out of this message that might be important? And is this credible? The article goes on to say, A story which promising you something the media does not want you to know is almost certainly fake. This was from TechEye, James. It's a sidebar, but it's kind of part of the story as well. It was a really poorly written article. I had to just sort of edit it just for clarity alone. And so we do a little bit of extra digging and we look at the News Literacy Project, NLP. Bonus points for it having the same acronym as Neuro-Linguistic Programming. I like that. They note on their website, thenewsliteracyproject.org, NLP's new PSA campaign, backed by Facebook and coming this spring, will give people the tools to understand what information to trust. Made possible with support from the Rockefeller Foundation. And there you have it. And seen, as they say. James.
Oh, boy. Well, again, exactly like story number one, this, we could file this under the same category of stories where this is a good idea that we do need media literacy. We've talked about it a lot. I've talked about it before. We really do need people to step back and critically look at news and information that's coming at them, because there is such a thing as fake news. But who's in control of the propaganda indoctrination organs that will be force-feeding our children and others into what is and is not fake news? Oh, you can trust it because it's from the BBC, but you can't trust it. I mean, let's be real. There is fake news on all sides of everything. I still, when I was looking at the David Rockefeller documentary, I was astounded that there were so many people propagating the nonsense about him having 7 heart transplants and all of that. I mean, just total, complete made-up nonsense that is propagated in the alt media, because no one bothers to look at the source. Where did that information come from? How do we know that? Oh, it's completely made up? Oh, okay, let's continue to propagate it. So we do need media literacy, and these are good questions to be asking when we look at any story, but let's apply it equally across the board. Oh, a sarin gas attack in Syria just on the eve of peace talks, just as Tillerson has said, okay, we're not going to take Assad out, you know, it's, and everything seems to be going on Assad's side, and suddenly he launches a sarin gas attack, and now it's being reported in the MSM unquestioningly, based on what sources? Who made this? Who's making money of it? Who might help or be harmed by this message? What is left out that might be important? Is this credible? All good questions to be asking with a story like this one. But strangely enough, all you see is news reporters on the MSM networks making emotional appeals. Oh, well, won't they do something? Why won't they go in and bomb the hell out of Syria? Oh! So, again, I think, again, it cuts both ways. And as I say, this is a good idea. We do need more media literacy. We do need people asking these questions, but we don't need it force-fed by people like Pierre Omidyar from the Omidyar Network. And if you don't know about the Omidyar Network, I'll throw in a link to a eye-opener report that I did a couple of years ago about Secrets for Sale, the Greenwald Omidyar NSA connection. And for people who don't know, yes, Omidyar is the guy who bought the Snowden secrets for essentially by creating the First Look network that became The Intercept. So there's a big history there of Omidyar being the billionaire who's going to buy up and control what news is and what it isn't, and here's a further attempt at it. So I wouldn't exactly be celebrating this new announcement.
And again, we'll include, like I said, all the articles and things that we mentioned here. It was just, you know, James, as I start to kind of research and lay out these stories with each one, it's like, oh, this won't be as easy as I think it is each time to find, and Rockefellers, you know, it took all of 90 seconds. But does Tech Eye wonder about that? Does the Telegraph wonder about any of that? It's all this sort of selective outrage and selective enforcement of stomping out selective fake news. So for our third and final story this week on New World Next Week, episode 305 for April 6th, 2017, we get a little bit of good news, James. Graphene-based sieve turns seawater into drinking water. This from the aforementioned BBC, a UK-based team of researchers has created a graphene-based sieve capable of removing salt from salt water. A sought-after development could aid the millions of people without ready access to clean drinking water. The promising graphene oxide sieve could be highly efficient at filtering salts and will now be tested against existing desalinization membranes. It has previously been difficult to manufacture graphene-based barriers on an industrial scale. Reporting their results in the journal Nature Nanotechnology, scientists from the University of Manchester have earmarked it as one of the most promising materials for future applications, and we'll give you the link to that original report, Tunable Sieving of Ions Using Graphene Oxide Membranes. And we also have a little bit of other good news, James, I think just as far as just kind of really interesting scientific breakthroughs. Spinach leaf transformed into beating human heart tissue. And we also have the PDF of that as well, which is not behind a paywall like the previous one is. So, James, in some ways, this sort of, once we get our floating freedom cities like we talked about last week, we're just turning the salt water into drinking water and we're all good, right?
I would certainly hope so. These are positive developments. These are examples of good things that can be done with technology. And again, I think we have to, you know, let's wait until we see it. Let's not start celebrating it yet, because they haven't actually produced these graphene oxide sieves at scale, in an industrial scale. So, you know, we'll see when they actually are able to bring it to market and in what way. But at any rate, it is a step forward. And this is the type of technology that transcends the Malthusian nonsense that has been built into and engineered into the population for centuries now, that what the world as it is as it is, and nothing will ever change it. There will never be a way to, you know, desalinate water en masse, for example, to suddenly make all of this water available for drinking and things like that. It's a Malthusian mindset that's been programmed into us to make us hate humanity and hate everything, you know, every newborn baby is another cancer on this planet kind of nonsense, as opposed to the constant progress of technology that constantly opens up new boundaries for humanity on this planet. And this is another example of that. So I'm happy when that happens. More people will be, the planet will be able to sustain more people because of this type of technology. And let's continue doing the technological revolution that will make that possible.
Well, and to maybe to mention the Rockefellers one more time, you know, it's those eugenics obsessed powers that shouldn't be that occult these kind of breakthroughs and have throughout the last 100+ years or so, electric cars, hemp, all of these different things. So it's the battle against, you know, occulting this kind of knowledge and hopefully making it completely free and open source for everybody. Speaking of free and open source for everybody, James, you and I both create independent, non-commercial alternative media. We will always include the links to support our work, Patreon, and the like. And that's another New World Next Week for you.
All right, let's do it again next week. James, thank you for the three stories.
Thanks, buddy. Take care.